Hi, I'm Christine, and I just took a tour of the Thompson Center. You're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. This is show number 754. And what we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Be sure to say hello online on Twitter at Outside the Loop, on the Facebook page, on the Instagram page at Outside the Loop Radio is the handle there. And, of course, you can download the podcast of this show wherever you get your podcasts. So check that out and OutsideTheLoopRadio.com for all of the audio archives, as well as WGNRadio.com. Bob Ferguson is our engineer in the studio this morning. We love Fergie. We love Colin Seaman, who is the producer of the show. Hi, Colin.
Good morning, you rambling man.
Oh, ramblers.
Rambling man. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay, Colin. It is an exciting time, isn't it? With the Ramblers being the Ramblers, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, you know? I'm scared to talk about it because I don't want to jinx it.
They're pretty good. They've got the number one defense in the country.
Yes.
That's really good. That's like way better than they were a couple years ago when they made it to the Final Four. I understand like every new year is a new year. I get you. I get that. But they're pretty good.
It's exciting, man. It's good for the city, too. And I went to Loyola, for those who don't know, so I'm...
Yeah, I mean, it's good for the city. A little sad for the state that matchup between U of I was so early. It's just like some Illinois on Illinois, you know, basketball war going on. Like, could we add that a little bit later in the tournament? Why'd we have to do that so quick?
I know.
You know?
I know.
Why'd we have to do it? But it was a great game. I mean, it was not a great game if you're an Illini fan, but Loyola just smashed him. And you got to, like, tip your cap to some really, just a really good basketball team.
Yeah, and it's exciting to watch. It's exciting to watch. So I'm excited. Fingers crossed.
I know we don't talk sports on here, Mike, but you know, your Ramblers are pretty good.
I'm knocking on wood on the table here. God, what a week, Colin. I'm spent. I feel a little confused. I mean, on one hand, you know, Mayor Lightfoot's opening up the city a little bit more than it was before, loosening some restrictions, but then you hear that there's an uptick in COVID cases. That was a little disjointing for me, you know?
For sure. I agree. It's like, wait, what?
It's exactly it. Wait a second. You just said that you're going to open more of the city up, but then you're just telling me that there's more COVID cases. What the heck is going on? I think that just kind of sums up this past, you know, year plus has been a lot of that, you know?
Yeah, it was a week. I agree with you, man. It was a week.
It was a week. And, you know, this made me smile. On Twitter, our friend at Chicago Bars, who...
Friend of the program.
Friend of this show. We've had him on. He is a man who works in the hospitality industry-ish in Illinois. He knows a lot of folks there. And his Twitter handle, at Chicago Bars, is now sort of legendary. He's always on Twitter. Someone suggested on Twitter that they just start vaccinating people at bars. Now, think about that. You can open up bars. You can open up more bars, right? And if you have, like, outdoor vaccinations, then people could get vaccinated, maybe get a cocktail afterwards. I don't know if you're supposed to, but let's just go with that. Everyone could win.
I love the sentiment, but I think that was, like, one of the first things I was told when I got my first shot. It was, you can't have booze for 24 hours.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I don't
get
know.
That memo. I did not get that memo.
I don't know. So I'm on team Pfizer.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's necessarily true with the other two options that are out there. So maybe I'm just trying to keep your fantasy alive here. At least two-thirds of it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I made it through. I definitely...
Did you just go out and tie one on as soon as you got shot one? Because you're like, I'm done. Oh, my God. Here we go.
I got to say, no, I didn't do that. I didn't do that. But, you know, that night, I was at home and I had, you know, a couple drinks. And then this was after round two, and I woke up the next morning feeling awful because of the symptoms of the second dose. the flu-like symptoms.
Yeah.
And then I immediately thought, like, oh, God, did I screw something up? But no, it was all the classic symptoms. I thought about going out after I got that second dose. But you're not supposed to. You have to wait 2 weeks after until you're fully vaccinated. That's the rule.
That's right. Full protection 2 weeks after shot two. That's correct.
You know, I think the bar idea was interesting. We have a lot of interesting ideas and good things we're talking about on the show today. We will discuss some good stuff happening in North Lawndale. You know, North Lawndale, that community on the west side, this is crazy. They just got garbage cans. They just got garbage cans. That's insane that a community in Chicago has not had garbage cans on public streets. So we'll talk about that, but also the great work that's going on in the North Lawndale community to make that place better. We'll also check in with our friend Steve Krakow, the Secret History of Chicago Music segment, and we will learn about a blues vocalist by the name of Andrew Big Voice Odom. It's a great blues nickname, Big Voice. And taxes, property taxes, going up, it seems, everywhere, especially in the Wicker Park community. We will learn about the skyrocketing property taxes in Wicker Park and what that means for some folks in that community and beyond. Stay tuned. This is Outside the Loop, just rambling on. Property taxes are a sore subject in Chicago. Many Chicagoans have seen an increase in their property taxes in recent years, and this is irritating, but this is also forcing some homeowners out of their communities. Let's turn our attention right now to the Wicker Park neighborhood in Chicago. This area saw tax levies jump from $27.5 million in 2000 to almost $78 million in 2019. Hannah Alani is a reporter for Block Club Chicago. This week, she wrote a story on how skyrocketing property taxes are forcing out senior homeowners in the Wicker Park community. You can check out what she is writing at blockclubchicago.org. And she is with us here on Outside the Loop today. Hannah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So let's start off with a little bit of background here. I said that Wicker Park it has seen an increase in property value. It's a hot neighborhood, and gentrification really has changed the face of that community, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been, you know, the longtime homeowners who I've interviewed, and of course, I've only lived in the area for 2 years, so my personal perspective is quite limited on this. But that's why interviewing these longtime homeowners is so fascinating, because they have this institutional knowledge of how the neighborhood has been decade after decade after decade. And everyone kind of comes back to around the same time, you know, sometime in the late 90s, early 2000s, that's when the neighborhood really started to kind of get hip and get hot and trendy. And the Real World, the MTV show, actually filmed in Wicker Park in 2005. And mm-hmm. a lot of small business owners told me that that was kind of the watershed year, that, you know, the national notoriety of the neighborhood, you know, brought on by the previous past couple decades of artists coming to the neighborhood and lots of bars, you know, there was a big grunge scene, and all of that kind of culminated in this neighborhood becoming really desirable. But at the same time, as this is the, you know, the story of gentrification, as neighborhoods become more desirable and as home values rise, that does push people out who had been living in the community previously. And the situation with these seniors is very unique. And just to back up a little bit, there are a million stories we could write about property taxes in Chicago.
And sure, sure.
Even on this subject alone, I probably could have written 10,000 words, whittling this story down and whittling this reporting down to what it ended up being, which I think was around 2,800 words in the story, was really difficult. I mean, there are so many kind of policy rabbit holes you can fall down when you're doing this kind of work,
right.
And, you know, digging into, you know, the levies and, you know, why are taxes so high in the first place, and then kind of chipping away at, you know, you start looking at pension figures and where the money's actually going. And I think what really helped us tell this story and what helped us tell it effectively was zeroing in on the most specific, nuanced example we could find, which was the very specific and unique story of senior citizens who happen to live in, within a 2-block radius in Wicker Park and have lived here for 4 or 5 decades, been neighbors for that long. And grounding the story and all the complexities of the property tax system and how rising property taxes are interconnected with this theme of gentrification, but telling it through the narrative and the lens of these three people, I think that really grounds this really dense and meaty and complex kind of migraine inducing topic for not just readers, but for me as a journalist as well.
Yeah. You bring up a bunch of great points there. I mean, the web of rules and regulations when it comes to property taxes is extensive in Cook County. And you do mention that in this piece, again, up at blockclubchicago.org. But I do like how you have that sort of human through line, how you're profiling some of these residents who purchased homes in the Wicker Park area in the 70s or 80s. And there's a lot of detail that you go into in the story. So obviously we don't have time for all of that. But basically, they're paying so much in taxes that some are dipping into their 401ks, they're dipping into their savings just to be able to pay the property taxes to live in these homes in Wicker Park.
Yeah, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, the reaction to the story has been, and again, I mean, I just kind of go back to what I was saying earlier. It's really hard, I think, to get readers to care about an issue like this because it's so dense and because it's so complicated and hairy, but because we told it through the lens of real people, it really resonated with a lot of readers. I actually got more feedback, you know, through Twitter, Facebook, emails from this story in the past 24 hours than from any story I've ever written in my career. And it's been a mixed bag. You know, a lot of the feedback I've received is from people in to the exact same situation, you know, reaching out, telling me, sharing their stories or their parents' stories, you know, what they paid for their building back in the 70s and 80s and how, you know, the mortgage payment is a fourth or a fifth of what their property tax bill is currently. I also got some feedback from readers who said, you know, I don't quite understand the issue here. Don't they own million-dollar homes? You know, the equity that they've built on these homes, you know, they're in a good position if they wanted to sell. But I think the heartbreaking thing here is that kind of what we've come to. You know, these people, they were all three of these individuals were working class, blue collar Chicagoans. And back when they bought in Wicker Park was a blue collar working class neighborhood. They paid off their homes. They wanted to stay in this neighborhood. They wanted this neighborhood to be their home, you know, live in the home where they raise their kids, where their grandkids come to visit them. They wanted to live out their final days here. But, you know, the money that, you know, people set aside throughout their lives for, you know, end of life costs, you know, senior homes, that money is drying up right now for these individuals because they are paying these outrageous property tax bills. And the problem, I get at this in the story, there is an exemption that was designed specifically for seniors on a fixed income called the senior freeze. And what the senior freeze does, it doesn't freeze your bill, but it freezes your assessed value of your home. And that will in turn, you know, indirectly bring your bill down, you would think. But
right,
the problem is that that exemption requires an income, an annual income of $65,000 or less. And to stay in this neighborhood and maintain these multi-generational, multi-unit buildings in which these seniors are renting out these units in their three flats, in their coach houses to members of the community, they've had to raise their rents to keep up with the tax bills. So essentially they're caught in this kind of catch-22 situation where the rental income they have to charge kind of, it pushes them beyond the threshold. They've eclipsed the threshold. And let's be honest, you know, Wicker Park is not a neighborhood these days because of gentrification, where someone making $65,000 could afford to maintain a three flat.
Yeah, and I know that in this piece you quote Cook County Assessor Fritz Kagi, and he says that commercial properties are being undertaxed, so the taxes have to be made up, that deficit has to be made up somewhere, so there's an increase in property taxes. But overall, what is being done about this issue? Because this is, you're right, this is heartbreaking. What is being done? Is anything being done about this?
What Assessor Kagi is saying is, you know, look, we can kind of pull levers here and tweak exemptions there and try to get relief through these really, hyper-focused areas like raising the senior tax threshold. Or we could take a step back and look at the big picture, which from Assessor Kagi's perspective, the big picture is that we are looking at decades of improperly done assessments. Assessor Kagi told me that right now, like when he came into office, he found out that 50% of the commercial properties in the city, the hotel buildings, you know, any kind of commercial property, were actually under assessed. Those messed up assessments, that is increasing the tax burden for the residential payers and certainly for the mom and pop landlords and those on fixed incomes. So what Assessor Kagi is saying is, hold on, we need to step back and we need to fix the assessments that are wrong in the first place. And he has proposed legislation that would help do that. So there are so many ways to attack this problem, but at the end of the day, any meaningful change, any tangible change would have to go through Springfield. It all has to be mandated at the state level. The assessor's office can advocate for change, but Assessor Kagi actually doesn't have any power to, you know, wake up tomorrow morning and say, hey, I'm going to raise this income threshold. That would have to be legislated through Springfield.
Well, this is a complicated, it is a dense issue that we're talking about here. But again, it's important because we're talking about lives, we're talking about people and their homes, and this is a very real issue. Again, skyrocketing property taxes forcing out senior homeowners in the Wicker Park community, but this is happening elsewhere as well in other neighborhoods, I'm sure. Hannah Alani is a reporter for Block Club Chicago. She wrote all about this issue this week, and you could check out her work at blockclubchicago.org. Hannah, thank you so much for talking to us today, and thanks for all of your hard work on this story.
Yeah, no, thank you. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Have you noticed the garbage cans on the public sidewalks of your neighborhood? Probably not, since most of us most likely take them for granted. However, the residents of the North Lawndale neighborhood in Chicago are noticing garbage cans in that area these days because for so long that community didn't have them. Rashorna Fitzpatrick is the executive pastor of the historic Stone Temple Missionary Baptist Church in North Lawndale at 3622 West Douglas Boulevard, and is the chair of the North Lawndale Community Coordinating Council's GROWS subcommittee. GROWS stands for Greening, Open Space, Water, Soil, and Sustainability. And on top of all that, she was named one of Time Magazine's Heroes of 2020, and she is here with us on the line today here on Outside the Loop. Rashorna, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're quite welcome. Really nice to have you here today. So, okay, let's start with these garbage cans. I mean, some of us might be surprised to hear that a Chicago neighborhood didn't have garbage cans on public streets, but that was pretty much the case. And you and others had to advocate for these garbage cans, didn't you?
Yeah, so the advocating started prior to me being a part of the GROWS committee, but I'll give credit to Mamie Gray. She is also a part of the GROWS, but part of the North Lawndale Greening Committee. They've been fighting for some years now for garbage cans, and we've all jumped into the fight, and we love our alderman. He made it happen, and we are celebrating. I mean, who would think that people would be celebrating for garbage cans? Well, we are in North Lawndale.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think, you know, when we put this in sort of a larger context of Chicago and the history of Chicago, I think that when we look at a neighborhood like North Lawndale, and for so long you didn't have these public garbage cans, do you think that this issue speaks to a larger issue of maybe the priorities historically of the city of Chicago?
Sure. Many of the communities where Black and brown people live are disinvested. So there's not a lot that have been given to us, even though in these communities we should have everything that everybody else has, but it doesn't seem to always happen that way. And what should be normal seems so hard to come by. So, yeah, the city of Chicago is just kind of difficult when it comes to getting the correct services. And, you know, I said a minute ago, who would think that people would be happy to get garbage cans? Well, this is a community that not only needs garbage cans, but a lot of other things that other communities have that we should have, but we yet don't have. But we're still fighting. And I think fight is a strong word. We're still pressing in to get the things that we need. So I'll say we're still in the press.
The full court press.
Full court press.
Here in this March Madness time, we'll use the basketball terminology. So, you know, I think this story of what you do at the Stone Temple Missionary Baptist Church in North Lawndale is incredible, because your church has become sort of a focal point. It's like an anchor in the North Lawndale community. And you have been engaged in this full court press. I mean, you have, especially in the last year, I know that you've had people come to your church, socially distanced, of course. You've been providing meals. You've been providing a place of community. And I think that it's important to just call that out, because North Lawndale doesn't always get great press. And we want to make sure that we know that there are so many great people doing great things. And I think your church is really at the center of all that.
I'm glad that you're giving us this shout out. Yep, you're absolutely right. A lot of things have happened since COVID has invaded our space. And I have to give credit to my husband, who has really been instrumental in allowing us to go forward, open up our doors. Derek Fitzpatrick, who is the pastor of Stone Temple. And we have really just meet the needs of the community. Not that we have not always done it, but in this season, we found a way to do it when it seemed impossible. So when it comes to food, we have a love fridge, because a lot of people lost their jobs. Some people are essential workers, but they still weren't making enough money to make ends meet because things were closing down. So we have a love fridge there. We also have partnered with Urban Girls Collective, and we were getting hundreds of boxes of food 2-3 times a week to make sure that the community was taken care of. North Lawndale Community Coordinated Council made sure we had ample PPE to make sure everybody was socially distanced. You mentioned that earlier. And even right now, I'm so excited to announce that we will be able to have the vaccination taking place at our church. So wow. The doors are open. And, you know, even if you look at our community, I just guess I'll have to shout out my disappointment to the administrators at Loretta Hospital, even knowing that we were hit the hardest, one of the hardest hitting communities in the nation was the Black communities as it relates to COVID, and to see vaccines being shifted to other places in our city who were not suffering as we do. That's disheartening, but I'm thankful that we will be receiving vaccines at the church so that people can come by and take the shot right in their own community, and they don't have to worry about having transportation. So I am just feeling so blessed that we're able to do that. Just excited about the things that are happening in addition to the PPE, the food. And we've really been able to just kind of minister to people. We give away 200 cups of soup every Monday to the community, rain, shine, sleet or snow. We've been out there. Well, now we look like we're going to be getting some rain and some shine. So we're excited about that. And it's such a camaraderie. There are people from all over. We have Open Books who comes to give out books to the young people. When we just started out with just soup, we have another organization that comes to give 200 bag lunches. And Urban Girls Collective, our partners, they bring their Fresh Move bus, and you're able to get $10 worth of free produce every Monday. So it's turned into a little social distance party. We're all safe. We're all taking care of each other. And I'm really excited that we have this opportunity to be loving and kind and being our brother's keeper in our community.
So I just wanted to mention this too, that there's a plan in place. There's this quality of life plan in place for North Lawndale. And in addition to everything that you've been saying with really community involvement and getting people together, you know, part of the plan is to increase the number of green spaces, to get people more engaged in environmental events in the neighborhood. And I think that your church is certainly a part of that, but also it's another example of getting the community together, right? Getting people all on the same page. And, you know, the people of North Lawndale, they want a good life too. Everyone wants just a nice slice of the pie and to have a good life. And so there's this quality of life plan in place to try to achieve that. And I think that's really great that North Lawndale folks, stakeholders in the community got together to do that.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Other the committees, we have transportation committee, we have education committee, we have the greening open space committee. We have, anything you can imagine that's going to touch a heart or a soul of a person, that committee exists. We want to make sure that technology is on point. We want to make sure that economic development takes place. So if you look at the quality of life plan, every aspect of the human life is touched there. From greening to even arts, there's a committee that makes sure that we're having concert times and times together. And it's just looking at the whole man, making sure that mind, body, and spirit is taken care of, and that there is a place of peace that we're experiencing. So I like to say we're trying to make sure that there is unity in our community.
Well, so much going on in the North Lawndale community. So many good things happening in that neighborhood. It's very exciting. And really, all the work that you and everyone at the church, Reshorna, are doing, it's just wonderful. And again, Reshorna Fitzpatrick is the executive pastor of the Stone Temple Missionary Baptist Church in North Lawndale. And she is also the chair of the North Lawndale Community Coordinating Council's GROWS subcommittee, working to better the neighborhood. Reshorna, congrats on all the great work so far. And I'm excited to see what you do next. Thanks for talking to us today.
Mike, thanks for calling. Peace and blessings to you, and take care.
Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. The strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter the self-quarantine version of
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Oh, East St. Louis. Come on, East St. Louis. I live in East St. Louis. Well, in East St. Louis.
I'm yes, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of Steve Krakow, who is the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music, also known as Plastic Crime Wave himself. And Steve, this is the final winter blues edition of The Secret History of Chicago Music for this season. I mean, there's a light at the end of the tunnel. Very exciting, man.
I mean, the way I look at it is, you know, I'm sure you've seen it around. There are still some rotten piles of snow that have not completely gone away. I'm sure you've seen them. They're gray and gross and got a bunch of trash sticking out of them. So every time I see it, I feel those winter blues still. So I feel like in two more weeks, those will be gone when the next Secret History hits and we will be done, right?
Yes, correct. Let's just go
with
that.
You can't argue with that logic, right? That's extremely logical logic right there.
Logical logic. That'd be a great name for a band. Logical logic.
Hey, there you go.
Well, we are not profiling logical logic this week. We are talking about a blues musician. He does have a great nickname. His name is Andrew Big Voice Odom. Andrew Big Voice Odom. What a cool nickname.
Yeah, he had a few. I guess he would be, sometimes he would be BB, Andrew BB, which I guess he was like a big BB King fan, and he was also a big Bobby Blue bland fan. So yeah, that's a lot of B's right there. So I guess sometimes he would be known as that. But yeah, Jimmy Dawkins, who I covered way, way, way back in the strip, got to hang out with him once. Very cool dude since his past. He gave him the name, Big Voice, and it pretty much stuck. But then he, throughout his career, he threw BB in there sometimes too.
Those blues musicians have to make it complicated sometimes for the historians looking back on their legacy. So let's talk about Andrew Big Voice Odom. He's born in Louisiana in 1936, and similar story to a lot of these other blues musicians, begins singing gospel in his family's church. And then in 1955, Andrew Big Voice Odom moves to East St. Louis, Illinois, and that's where he starts to really perform with some big-time blues guys.
He was a good one, I feel, to end on here, because he's such an archetypal blues man. If you look at his, yeah, brought up in Louisiana, reared on gospel, came to Chicago and, yeah, jumped in with some of these bigger cats, like, right away. And, you know, I feel like he might have been bigger if he had had, like, you know, more of a focus or his own band or recorded more under his own name, you know, like... He could have been more like a Muddy Waters or something like that, but he just didn't, you know, fully. But yeah, he jumped in and pretty much started playing with Earl Hooker here right away, who, you know, if you're into the blues, is like a veritable guitar god. Another guy I covered way back in the strip. He was really innovative guitarist, one of the first guys to throw a wah-wah in there. And then he would do slide guitar with the wah-wah.
Yeah.
I, in a weird way, I've never heard anyone else play guitar like him. So anyway, he threw in with him pretty much right away and was with him in one of his pretty much his best period, you know, until he passed away.
Yeah, so he's in Chicago by 1960. That's where he really starts to play with Earl Hooker, like you talked about there, and the sound that's coming out of that band. And by the way, the band... it's pretty great. You know?
The band is hot. I mean, yeah, it, Pine Top Perkins, who I think we talked about last show, he comes up a lot, but he's the man on piano. You could want no one more. Carrie Bell on harmonica, as I'm sure you know, one of the gods.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so yeah, Freddie Roulette on guitar, another underappreciated guy. So yeah, it's basically an incredible band.
I love this. He was also showing up at the Maxwell Street Market. He just make appearances there and sometimes just start singing outside.
Yeah, I guess so. From what I gather, he would also he'd hop on stage at like Buddy Guy's Legends or whatever too. And I guess he would sometimes he would more or less do this three stop thing where he would like go to church, go to Maxwell Street, and then go with fill in at Buddy Guy's, and that's actually when he passed. He was like hard gigging to the end, and he pretty much had a stroke behind the wheel. And I guess luckily his wife was in the car. My editor found that a bit of information. I kind of wondered, like, what happened, you know?
Yeah.
But he hit a tree. She survived, but yeah, sort of a tragic end there. And it sucks because he was starting to come up a bit in the 90s, I feel like, and really get his due. He had just gotten signed to like a cool blues label, and they just flown him into Canada to front this band called the Gold Tops, and they were playing festivals up there. So it seemed like he was almost ready to have like a veritable, you know, renaissance sort of rediscovery there in the 90s. But yeah, he passed in 91.
Well, he's, you know, kind of getting his due right now, you know, with some reissues. The 2017 box set that came out, his music's on there.
Yeah, he's still going. That series, it seems like they put out like a box set or so, like every, there was I think another one in 2011 maybe. So yeah, it seems like they're just, the interest continues, you know, like especially if you're into the blues and you realize this guy's played with all the greats and everything, and he is one of the greats. But yeah, he's on this box set with a lot of his old
cohorts, Jimmy Dawkins, Magic Slim, Eddie Clearwater, Jimmy Johnson, who is still with us, covered for Secret History a little while back. One of the few living,
yeah,
you know, of the generation. Yeah.
Well, Andrew, Big Voice Odom is alive and well in our minds and our ears on this week's show. Again, you could check out the Secret History of Chicago Music column in the Chicago Reader and online at chicagoreader.com. Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave, is the author of the Secret History of Chicago Music strip, and he also hand draws the musician or band that he is profiling, so you could check out his artwork as well. Steve, as always, thank you so much for chatting today, sir.
My new nickname could be Big Hands, because, you know, I got to draw this stuff. I got to, and it kind of runs in my family.
I'm just going to leave that right there.
Okay. We got a boxer. We got some boxers in the family.
Yeah.
So there you go.
You made me feel so good, like a woman should. So good, live in my neighborhood.
Yes, the rap party for Outside the Loop show number 754, where Colin and I recap the show.
Party.
Much love to the Black Oil Brothers. Shout out to the Black Oil Brothers. They've got new music. We didn't we play some new music from them recently?
I think we did. Yeah, I just finished a music video that I shot for them back in March of 2020, but it's done.
Is that online for us, Colin?
Yeah, it's been online for a good month. I did finish it within a year's time. I got it up in February, at the end of February, so I at least got it to them a year later. But it's up. It looks okay. Looks okay.
Love the Black Oil Brothers. Check them out.
Somebody hitting you up. Black Oil Brothers just paid you, I think, for all that promotion.
That's why I talk about them, because they send me checks every time I mention them.
I heard that phone ding. Mm-hmm. Somebody sending you money.
That's right. That's right. It's like the phone-a-thon over here. So, I gotta say, I love talking to Pastor Rashorna Fitzpatrick in North Lawndale, and she is really incredible. I mean, we talked about the community, and we talked about how folks are engaged in that community, but her story, and I mentioned that she was one of Time Magazine's Heroes of 2020. This was back in December. I mean, she has done so much for that community, along with her husband. They're just, you know, they're anchors of the community. And so to profile what they do, and we only scratch the surface, it was just really inspiring. So hats off to Rashorna and her husband and everyone over at the Stone Temple Missionary Baptist Church and everyone who's really involved in the quality of life plan for North Lawndale. It's a great thing. It's really a great thing.
Yeah, that I really loved how she just so eloquently and matter-of-factly, just to the point, said, you know, this quality of life plan, what we're working on in the community here is we are thinking about every single way in which a person is interacting with this community or is needs to be serviced by the city. Just like they're thinking of, I forget her exact words, but it's like if it involves a person or an experience at any point that, you know, a citizen within a city should have, we're thinking about it, right? I really appreciate that thinking.
It's a great message, I think, an inspirational message for all of us that we're all in this together. We're all united by our common humanity. And we lose that, I think, in a lot of the conversation sometime, the citywide conversation, the narrative that is, you know, constructed about certain neighborhoods and everyone's kind of looking out for themselves these days. I get it, but you've got these great stories of these incredible people who are thinking of others before really themselves. And, you know, that's going on in North Lawndale and we just need to know about it. At the very least, we need to know about it because it's inspirational. And maybe, like you said, Colin, we can sort of model that. And I think that's something that's needed these days, especially these days. And Colin, go Ramblers.
So they'll have played both games. So the next time we talk, your Ramblers will either be in the Final Four or they won't.
And I will be in first place in the bracket.
Yeah, no. Because you didn't put the Ramblers in your Final Four.
Yeah, I didn't want to talk about that.
Yarg.
And that's the rap party for Outside the Loop show number 754.
Rap party.
And that just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 754 is all wrapped up just for you. Thank you so much for listening to the show this week. Thanks to Colin for producing. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for being our engineer. Have a great week. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop on 720 WGN.